Hello. This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 20th of September. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by my husband, Tom, and me. And your readers today are Brian Woodruff.
Hello.
And Albie Minns.
Hello.
And me. So, now, Brian, could you please give us the What's On?
Yes. What's On says, I don't know if you've been told about these concerts before, but anyway, Hyde 900 launched its annual music season last Saturday, and concerts are being performed in St Bartholomew's Church, Hyde, on Saturdays, October the 12th, 19th and 26th, and will conclude on Friday, November the 8th. The theme is French music. Tickets are £7 and can be booked online at www.hyde900.org.uk. That's hyde900.org.uk, or on the door unless sold out. On Saturday, September 28th, the hospital at St Cross is holding a Michaelmas fair from 10 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. with craft stalls, refreshments and medieval contests. Entrance is £3 with free parking. On Saturday, the 5th of October, Dr. Phil Hammond brings a brand new comedy show to the Discovery Centre, turning the whole of medicine into a succession of games for you to play with your doctor. And a couple of weeks later, on 19th of October, also at the Discovery Centre, there's an evening with Henry Blofeld of Test Match Special fame. Both shows start at 8 p.m. and tickets cost £15.
Now, announcements. Lighting Up Time ends on Friday the 20th of September at 6:49 a.m. and begins at 7:09 p.m. On Wednesday the 25th of September, it ends at 6:57 a.m. and begins at 6:57 p.m. No, I didn't get it wrong. We're on the equinox. Exactly 12 hours difference. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Lynn Parker on 01962 862 826. That's 01962 862 826. And now we come to the main headlines for this week. They are: bus changes leave pensioners isolated, victory for Save Our Parks campaigners, and probe into abuse claims continues. And I will kick off with the first one. Bus changes leave pensioners isolated. Row over cuts to Oslebury to Winchester service. The reduction of buses between Oslebury and Winchester has sparked concern that pensioners are becoming cut off from the city. The Shoppers bus service, the 63, will be reduced from 5 to just 3 days a week, while the 63A service, which from September the 23rd will be run by Stardust Travel, will be exclusively a school bus, meaning pensioners cannot use it. Philip Blair, managing director of Zela Bus, which currently provides the service, said the contract was surrendered after his firm proposed a retiming of the buses that was rejected by Hampshire County Council. Stagecoach subsequently won the new contract on the basis of a three-day-a-week service. Stephen Harfield, 65, lives in Beech Grove and suffers from arthritis and osteoporosis. He said, people are going to have to pay money for taxis or they're going to be stuck. My wife came out of hospital last week and we had to get the bus to Badger Farm, then walk to Oslebury. It took us 3 hours. The service is getting worse all the time. And it's not just for elderly people, but for younger people too, who might want to come into Winchester at the weekends. The vice chairman of Age UK Winchester, John Edwards, said, "For people in their 60s and 70s who can't afford to run a car, any curtailment of bus services is going to be really, really difficult for them. Isolation is the key thing we try to address, and curtailing bus services could really bring more isolation." Andrew Dyer, managing director of Stagecoach South, said his firm did bid for a 5-day service. The County Council took the option to review the timetable and decided what they thought was socially necessary. "It's very common that the county will ask operators to bid on a number of options. I'm sure we did present a 5-day week option." At the time of going to press, the County Council had not responded to requests for a comment. But local city councillor Lawrence Raffel said, "As far as I know, Hampshire County Council are doing the best they can with what they've got. I would have thought that pensioners could organise their lives so that they do not have to use the bus on those days when it's not running." But Oslebury Parish Council is seriously concerned about the move. The clerk, Michael Cleary, said, "We are writing to the County Council about it. For the frequent users who do not have cars, this will create considerable problems. We do not want Oslebury to become a village only for the rich and those who can afford cars and taxis." The parish has also told the County Council that parents of students at Peter Simmons College are worried, since the school bus will only cater for the Westgate. Colin Wright from Hampshire County Council's passenger transport group said in a letter to the parishes, "I am sorry again for the need for these further changes, but would assure you that we are working with both operators to ensure that transition to the new arrangements is as smooth as possible." On Monday, many Westgate children were late for school as the bus got stuck in traffic caused by roadworks in Colden Common.
And the second headline is Victory for Save Our Parks campaigners. Council U-turn over Abbots Barton Homes. Campaigners have won their battle to save Winchester Park from being concreted over for council housing. The City Council has dropped proposals to build 35 houses and flats on green open spaces at Abbots Barton as part of its £52 million council house building programme. It follows a Save Our Parks petition, signed by more than 500 people, urging civic chiefs to protect and preserve the large central park at Abbots Barton and green at Dyson Drive. Protesters set up a website, lobbied their city councillors, leafleted local residents and applied to the County Council for official village green status for Dyson Drive. Council chiefs said there is urgent need for more affordable homes, but protesters wanted to save the Riverside Park with its mature trees, oaks and sweet chestnut trees. However, parks in other parts of the city could still be developed under the council's 10-year house building plans, including Westman Road in Wick and part of Summers Close in Stanmore, although not before 2016. Mum of two, Lorna Chandler, Save Our Park spokesman, described the council rethink on Abbots Barton as a huge relief, good news. She said people were shocked the council could even consider building on the large park. It's well loved and well used by residents. There's no admission fee, it's open to all, including families who don't have much money. The U-turn was announced by council leader Keith Wood at Cabinet last week. The Tory council chief said, "The council's new build programme has done much to identify potential sites for new homes over the past 18 months. I now want to turn its focus more on the actual delivery of new homes and to relieve the uncertainty which is affecting some of our residents." He went on, "We have no plans to develop Dyson Drive or Charles Close in the foreseeable future." Previously, the council had proposed building 20 homes on the park off Charles Close and 15 flats on Dyson Drive. However, the council is still pressing ahead with proposals to build new homes along Hillier Way and turn two garage blocks at Chandler Road and Hussey Close into housing from 2016. The next new council homes to be built will be the former New Queen's Head site in Stanmore Lane, Victoria House in Victoria Road Hyde, and an extra care housing scheme for elderly people at a location still to be announced. Councillor Wood said that if additional funds become available, the council will look at sites in Alresford, Colden Common, Otterbourne and Swanmore.
Now the third headline, probe into abuse claims continues. Ex-children's home at centre of alleged assaults. This is an article by Rachel Masker. A major police investigation into allegations of historic abuse at a Winchester children's home is expected to last a further 5 months. The probe, codenamed Operation Preserve, covers alleged attacks on boys, including beatings and rapes, in the 1960s and 70s in the former county-run Winton House in Andover Road, an approved school for boys. It was triggered by more victims coming forward after the Hampshire Chronicle revealed last year 11 former pupils had launched compensation claims against the council. That number has now risen to 26. The men are claiming in total about £1 million, including solicitors' fees. Claims include damage for actual assaults, for psychiatric injuries later in life, and loss of earnings. But they've been put on hold pending the results of the investigation by Hampshire Constabulary's major investigation team. One of the former pupils, who said he was raped by two members of staff, said, "After I left that place, I went crazy. I ended up in prison because I got into so much trouble and bother. I just rebelled completely against the system. My wife keeps telling me to let it go, but I can't. It's like trying to pull out a barbed dagger. The council has got to accept responsibility for what happened." Winton House, now demolished and part of a new residential development, was a Home Office-approved school for boys aged 11 to 16. The new probe comes 12 years after the first police investigation, codenamed Operation Grangewood, resulted in the jailing of a former gardener, Michael Park, in 2004 for indecently assaulting three pupils. Park was the only member of staff to face criminal charges. The County Council settled out of court with his victims. However, Charles Derham, of Hampshire-based Verisona Solicitors, who is coordinating the new claims, said he was aware of allegations against 20 other members of staff. Police are reviewing evidence from Operation Grangewood when 113 former pupils were interviewed as part of the new probe. Mr. Derham said, "The police are still doing their job. They have not given anything away, so I am in the dark as to the strength of the evidence against any alleged perpetrators. If the individuals are still alive and police have sufficient evidence, I can't see any reason why they shouldn't be prosecuted. But that is not a matter for me to decide, but for the Crown Prosecution Service." The investigation, which started in April, is expected to finish by January 2014. Hampshire Constabulary refused to give any details other than to say it had a team of officers committed to the probe and it was progressing well. A spokesman said, "We take all allegations of this kind extremely seriously, and it is very important to preserve the integrity of this investigation. Therefore, we will not be in a position to give further details until inquiries have concluded."
That concludes the headlines, and now we continue with death notices. And these are they. Cherrett. Kenneth Cherrett, in High Wycombe Hospital, aged 85. Cole. Robin Cole, MBE, chairman of Condor Group PLC. Cook. Florence Cook, aged 94. Hanks. Vanessa Hanks, aged 38. Hurst Brown. Alan Hurst Brown, peacefully at home, aged 92. Jones. Stella Jones, aged 82. Ridge, Alexander Ridge, tragically in a road accident, aged 40. Unsworth, Rita Unsworth, in Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 82. Waite, Audrey Waite, peacefully in Winchester, aged 84. And finally, Wolf, Benjamin Wolf, aged 89. And now we'll go over to Albie for Christian comment, please.
And the Christian comment this week is Guardians for Future Generations. We are clearing out a property in Cornwall in order to sell it. This has meant frequent trips to the tip, as we not only have what we have acquired, which is now surplus to requirements, but there is a lot of stuff that was left by the previous owners. I'm now familiar with all the different bays for specific waste: wood, metal, glass, TVs, general, and so on. We are also experts on what the local authority will collect. Much that is in good condition has been collected for resale for various local charities. I've been amazed at some of the good quality items that people have taken to the tip, when for considerably less effort it could have been collected for charity. When resold, it also gives opportunity to those less well off to acquire items at a lesser price. Also, despite the labelling, people throw everything in the general section, meaning it has to be sorted if it is going to have a chance of recycling. We're now approaching the traditional time for the church season of harvest. Summer has ended and the crops are being gathered in. Churches now think of harvests from the sea and from underground, as well as what is grown on the land. But I have yet to come across one that talks of waste and recycling. And yet the purpose of harvest is to thank God for the bounty of his creation and to remind ourselves that we are the guardians of it for future generations. Not everybody believes in climate change or that we are responsible for it by our actions in burning natural products, destroying the rainforests and creating methane from our rubbish tips, amongst other things. However, many of those that do are among the young, and they are rightly concerned about the planet they are going to inherit. Floods caused by freak heavy rain have affected our country, although even in these seem insignificant when compared to some of the in the rest of the world. Other areas are afflicted with drought, as their rains have not come. It seems to me that increasingly the evidence is there is something that something has gone wrong, and this is not only due to nature, and that this being so, we can do something about it and have a responsibility not just as good citizens, but as Christians to do so. Recycling and making good use of things we no longer need seems but a small contribution, but it is something we can all do, and perhaps our harvest is a good time to remind ourselves of this, part of our commitment to God's creation. That comes from Rosemary A. Baker.
And now we go on to the letters. And I'll start with the first letter. Councils need younger blood, says Margot Walker. Sir, home from the summer holidays and with our children back at school, I imagine the political parties are turning their thoughts to who will be the candidates for the various seats facing election next spring. Sadly, due to overseas travel and children, I would not be able to apply. But may I put in a plea for younger councillors with knowledge and imagination of the modern ways of the world and the technocratic age we live in, as well as an understanding of the needs of young families. We need a better age and gender balance. I calculate there are exactly twice as many male councillors as women. This is not right. I really feel that a council currently filled with elderly gentlemen in grey suits does not adequately represent the diverse and younger generation who live in our area. Dare I say old men with old ideas? Past decisions seem to have left us with one of the worst housing waiting lists in the country, and there have been some bizarre planning policies proposing retail premises when homes should have been the priority. It seems that even small village houses can be developed by outsiders for second homes, while those of us who've lived here all our lives find it virtually impossible to afford even the deposit required to buy somewhere to live and bring up a family in the area we love. In Italy and France, second home occupiers are charged higher local taxes and pay enhanced rates for water, electricity and gas. The old order needs to be changed, and a more responsive, modern type of councillor is urgently needed. Margot Walker, Little Ashton Dairy, Bishop's Waltham.
And the next letter is from Martin Jones, and it says, "The square has worked this way for years. Sir, I write in response to Peter Grant's letter of September the 12th, complaining of motorists ignoring signage en route to the square in Winchester. Clearly the residents of the area wish to have a gated access to their kingdom. Mr. Grant is not backward in this suggestion. Of course there will be nonsense regarding pollution, etc. However, the point remains that the residents of the square and surrounding area feel that if they shout loud enough, they can have a gated access just like College Street. It would be of interest to know how many living in the area were born in the city. I would like to point out to them Winchester was alive and kicking long before they decided to move here. Traffic has moved around that area for many years without danger or problems, and I trust will continue to do so. Time and again we hear global warming propaganda from the usual suspects, petty moaning regarding noise pollution from an annual music event, and now another brigade acting like spoilt children. If Winchester is so polluted and noisy, then move. We, indigenous to the area, are getting a little tired of our city being changed for the benefit of incomers. On a final note, as a former fireman, I ask if they have considered the delays attending any incident that gated areas impose on all emergency services. I just hope they never need us." And that's from Martin Jones of Tegdown Meads, Winchester.
And my letter, "Come on, people, live and let live." Sir, following the many letters regarding the Boomtown Festival, I should like to give my view. I live, as the crow flies, about 4 miles from the site, and can honestly say this popular festival causes me very few problems. Perhaps a bit of boom boom at night, but then only if the wind is in the right direction and my windows are open. Now, at my age, I don't want to go to this or any other pop festival, but there are 30,000 others who do, so what about a bit of give and take? I do not agree that the area was left in a disgraceful state for many weeks and was amazed at how quickly it was all cleared up. It annoys me that protesters always try to use the wildlife angle. That area is surrounded by shooting and hunting, another thing for the moaners to complain about, so I'm sure a few nights of music would make very little difference. And of course, the landowner makes money, and so do many others due to this festival. And there is nothing wrong with that. It seems to me that there is a section of our society who don't know how to enjoy themselves and are hell-bent on making sure no one else does. I wonder how they would react if they received complaints about their particular pursuits. So come on, people. How about live and let live for a few nights of the year? That letter comes from Bruce Anderson, Beach Road, Alsford.
This is a letter from Michael Vokes. "Don't bottle out of ambitious plan. Sir, I'm writing to you in support of the provision of a new substantial sports and leisure centre within the city of Winchester. I recognise that I live outside the borough boundaries, only just, but my family and I have used regularly the swimming facilities in River Park for many years, suiting my needs better than any other nearer pools. Its swimming facilities are set in a most pleasant environment, but are extremely tired and in need of replacement. The request by the chairman of Winchester City Penguins Swimming Club for a 50-metre pool is not excessive in demand and must be the way forward. I have returned recently from an international event held in a brand new leisure complex at Bangor, County Down. The facilities and design of the whole new build appeared excellent, and Winchester could do worse than look at the plans. In respect of a 50-metre pool, the Bangor pool was designed to have three pools at any one time when not required for competitive purposes, and this arrangement seemed to work well. Please, for once, think big in Winchester, just as the builders of the cathedral did hundreds of years ago. So often we have seen the council thinking and attempting to be progressive, but regularly have appeared to me to bottle out when imaginative plans require positive decisions. The list to me is long and painful, e.g. the M3 link to the city centre, a substantial inner ring road, Barton Farm, Bushfield, Silver Hill, and so the list grows. Michael G. Vokes, Hocombe Drive, Chandler's Ford.
And as on a similar subject, Alison Crompton writes, "Not too late to influence sport. Sir, your article of September the 12th suggested that a decision about the replacement of River Park Leisure Centre has already been taken by Winchester City Council. It has not. I understand council officers have developed a proposal with advice from DC Leisure, which has gone to Cabinet, but no decision has been taken about what to build, when, or how. If we want a centre that offers everything, it looks as if building at the Bar End is the only real option. An alternative might be new competition standard sports facilities at Bar End and a new leisure centre at North Walls. It's not too late. The city and district can still have the sports facilities we need if the council works with local sports clubs and others that understand sport, such as the university, and agrees what to build and where." And that is from Alison Crompton, Andover Road, Winchester.
Elizabeth Crawley, St Swithin Street, Winchester, writes under the heading, "Job well done, so why not finish it? Sir, the new pavement in St Swithin Street looks very smart and is a huge improvement. The rogue illegal traffic using the Great Minster Street rat run is hugely reduced. Well done. But Hampshire County Council seems to have deaf ears when it comes to tidying up. Despite many phone calls, the ugly stack of eight large red road barriers remains propped up against St Swithin's Church, corner of College Street and Kingsgate Street, after many months. Is Winchester City Council blind as well as deaf?"
This letter is from Mrs Pearl Gibbons. "Make bus station part of revamp. I noted with great interest your report of plans to revamp the Winchester railway station area. What an opportunity this could be to re-site a new bus station here too. So many bus routes already pass both into and out of the city close by. It would create less congestion and pollution, and a shuttle service similar to Park and Ride could provide transport in and out of the city centre. This, in turn, could free up more land for the Silver Hill redevelopment. There's a real opportunity here to create something Winchester could be proud of by providing some of the facilities it lacks at present. Pearl Gibbons, Chandler Road, Abbots Barton."
And from Mrs. K. Reich, "City floral displays were impressive. Sir, reading of the disbanding of the Winchester in Bloom, chronicled September the 12th, has prompted me to say thank you to those responsible for the splendid displays of hanging baskets around the city. The profusion and generosity gives pleasure to many of us. Certainly one of the best displays ever." And that's from Mrs. K. Reich, Northlands Drive, Winchester.
And this letter comes under the heading, "Think beyond the car as king." Sir, read your article, "Reverse Gear for City Parking Strategy," chronicles September 12. Local traders and businesses who welcome the City Council's proposals for further car parks to be built in the city centre should be wary. Currently, Winchester's mean traffic levels in the normal shopping working day are at about 88% of peak. That is to say, the network is close to all-day congestion. Encouraging yet further traffic into the city centre will exacerbate the problem and make the city less accessible to motorists. People will choose to go elsewhere. There is an unfounded belief that increasing car park provision equals economic success. If you look at European cities, where pedestrians, cyclists and public transport are the order of the day, business, shops and cafes thrive. Places such as Oxford are also a good example. Let's think beyond the car as king. Reduce city centre traffic by encouraging drivers to park on the edge of the city, whilst ensuring access for those with mobility problems. Improve the infrastructure for buses and bikes, and the quality of life for residents, workers, shoppers and tourists will improve dramatically. And that letter's from Hazel Agonbar, Egbert Road, Winchester.
If you want to make your views known to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle, all one word, .co.uk. Or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And now, looking back, we begin with the news from 200 years ago, which I'm going to start reading. 200 years ago, September the 20th, 1813, and this first item is to do with a theatre in London who was trying to get away without paying copyright. Marlborough Street. On Saturday at this office, no less than 9 informations for penalties were heard against Minister Cundy, proprietor of the Pantheon Theatre, avowedly at the suit of the Lord Chamberlain. The first information was for a representation of The Cabinet on the 26th of July. Mark Lonsdale, the informer on the former occasion, and who is designated the Lyceum Poet, stated that he was present at the representation of the opera of The Cabinet on the 26th of July. He took with him a book of the opera, and the dialogue, etc., was the same as at the winter theatres. But the chord of the pianoforte was struck at intervals. The defendant was convicted on the penalty of £50 and in the same penalty on 8 other informations. And the second item. On Saturday last was launched at Mr. Tyson's yard, Burselden, His Majesty's frigate called the Sirius of 38 guns. A person who had been employed to inspect this vessel was detected, a few days previous to the launch, in disposing of a quantity of copper bolts. And what is remarkable in this case, he was in the habit of complaining to Mr. Tyson that his store was repeatedly robbed of the copper, and that he suspected the workmen employed in the yard to have taken it. The overseer is now in confinement in the jail at Southampton.
And now we have 100 years ago, on September 20th, 1913. Accused of using obscene language, Winchester County Bench obscenity, Joseph Unsworth pleaded not guilty to a charge of using obscene language on the highway between Twyford and Eastleigh on September the 6th. Police Constable Payne proved the case and said the offence was committed at 10:15. Defendant using the language because he fell off his bicycle. Defendant, who said he worked at Eastleigh Locomotive Works, stated that he'd been to a smoking concert at Albrook and didn't remember using the language complained of. He was fined 1 shilling and 9 shillings costs and allowed a fortnight to pay. And the next one is, Sir, teetotal zealots who are obsessed with the idea that the cure for all ills that the country is suffering from which the country is suffering is to be found in further restrictive legislation in regard to the sale of alcoholic liquors, have yet to show the local veto or prohibition, which they so strongly espouse, would prove to be of any real remedy. Recently published statistics have made it quite clear that while the number of licensed houses is steadily dwindling, the anticipated diminution in drunkenness has not been brought about.
And now two articles from 50 years ago, September the 20th, 1963. And the first comes under the heading, Time Running Out for Rail Protests. Saturday is the final day for which protests will be received against the proposed closure of the Spratton Winkle Line, the stretch of railway between Romsey and Andover, which will end the direct route from the town to Southampton. And various organisations have been putting the final touches to their protest. Andover Liberal Party have forwarded a 22-point petition signed by 1,800 people to the South East Transport Users Consultative Committee. Both Andover Borough and Andover Rural Councils have also been active. And the second article, the Roads Department of Hampshire County Council is about to go on the air at a meeting of the Roads Committee of the County Council in Winchester on Monday. It was agreed to seek approval to a £17,000 scheme for the installation of radio communication in the department's vehicles. Such an installation, it was explained, would have its special value in the deployment of men and machines in winter emergencies when roads are snow and frostbound. It would also be used for county-wide control of road-making operations and emergency traffic hazards.
And now we have two items 25 years ago, September the 16th, 1988. Alsford Show, unimaginative. This comes from Letters to the Editor. Sir, I wrote to you last year about the Alsford Show. This year it was just as bad. Chemical companies, Dalgetty, Spillers, next to banks and estate agents. It wasn't a country show, but an unimaginative trade show. I felt like a stranger lost in a once familiar landscape where huge machines and alien objects displace what remained of the English landscape. Poor old Hampshire. The machines ranged from huge combines to Saab and Leyland cars, which can be seen anywhere. We all know that nitrates damage the soil, and yet there were still stands for chemical companies. Combines have killed off the field mouse, yet there they were. Alsford Show showed farmers at their worst. And the second item. Action on dog-free areas for children has been demanded by civic leaders, following reports that many of Britain's city centre parks are dangerously contaminated with a parasite spread by dog excrement. In a bid to clean up Winchester's recreation areas, members of the Amenities Committee gave high priority to the fencing off of children's play areas. They supported plans to protect areas vulnerable to dog fouling, noting that Oram's Arbour, Stanmore, Thurmond Crescent and Winnell Valley Road were most badly affected. And now we go over to Chronicle comment from Albie.
And the Hampshire Chronicle comment for this week comes under the heading Our 241st Year. Where now for these ambitious plans? A victory for people power or a U-turn by Winchester City Council. As reported on page 3, the City Council has watered down plans for public housing on open spaces in Abbots Barton. Proposals to develop the grassy open spaces off Chaundler Road and Dyson Drive have been dropped following a campaign by local people. Although homes off Hillier Way and on garages blocks off Hussey Close and Chandler Road are still on the table. A few years ago, the then council leader, George Beckett, surprised many by announcing the council would build 300 social homes over 10 years. It was an ambitious target to start to rectify the lack of house building over 30 years. Now, these are clear signs of wobbling. Ideas for 400-plus homes in Stanmore will be greatly reduced, with only the new Queen's Head site on Stanmore Lane currently looking likely for housing. It was initially earmarked as a community facility. Of course, this could all be Machiavellian manoeuvring by the council to propose lots of bold ideas, knowing full well that many will not be realised, but will enable others to slide through relatively unopposed. If so, that is a double-edged sword, as single-issue opposition groups will now be emboldened in other parts of the city.
Over to Brian, please, for first person.
And the first person this week is Judith Hennigan, who I'm reading this for, as it's female. I may have regressed into late nesting mode. The children are switching bedrooms again. This time they're redecorating. Duvets are draped over the banister, clothes are dumped in the bath, and the carpets are liberally flecked with English muffin. As another sibling departs for university, the remaining children expand into her space. Finally, the youngest one gets a decent-sized room, big enough for a friend to sleep over without legs sticking out onto the landing. My leaving one shifts her possessions across to my bedroom while she ponders what to do with them all. In the end, we make up 3 bin bags for charity shops and a couple more for recycling centre. The room she's retreating to is pretty small. I pop my head round the door as she sits on her sister's old bed. "It's good to have a clear out," I said, swallowing the lump in my throat. I hope she doesn't think I'm clearing her out. I won't get all maudlin over my disappearing family. They need to leave to meet new people and face new challenges. And anyway, the older two will be back again at Christmas. I may have regressed into late nesting mode, making chutney the house reeks of vinegar, stacking logs for the fire, recklessly promising a vintage slow gin, just in case there's any doubt that there's no place like home. But the younger pair are quick to point out that the advantages of the latest departure. There'll be more space on the sofa, more biscuits in the tin, less teasing at the supper table, and fewer squabbles over rights to the remote. I, meanwhile, get to keep odd socks at the bottom of the laundry basket and that weird flavoured fizzy drink at the back of the fridge. In exchange, I buy my daughter a saucepan. I don't want her to subsist on the kinds of meals I ate as a student, white cabbage with salad cream and golden syrup on toast. Thankfully, she can cook pasta. Still, food is the least of my worries. With my daughter away, I lose another dog walker. This is a genuine concern. How will I manage when they all leave? The dog isn't the only pet in the house. My younger son's bedroom has always been a bit of a zoo. Chili plants and cacti on the windowsill keep the sunlight at bay. A small and ancient fish lurks in the tank by his bed, and 2 fine reptiles, a corn snake and a leopard gecko, watch from their vivaria under his desk. I don't suppose these creatures will move on at any time soon. A pet is for life, and that life, it seems, is mine. Snakes can live for 20 years. This is longer than it takes to launch a child into the world. I'm guessing it will pass by in a flash.
Now, what has Bel Garum found for us this week in his alternative look at the news? I think we've got 4 items, and we'll start with Albie for one of them.
Demolish your home. We'll let you know. City council chiefs have complained of unfortunate media coverage of plans to remodel Stanmore Estate. Could they be referring to the Hampshire Chronicle's front page story revealing how shocked locals only discovered their homes had been earmarked for demolition when they turned up to a public exhibition of the plans? Not surprisingly, feelings ran high and rather rude words were used to describe officers and councillors. But, says a report to Cabinet last week, lessons were learnt, and things will be done differently in Winnall, which is next for some of the same treatment. In future, council officials will visit residents and tell them in person if their homes are threatened with the bulldozer. Belgarum is no PR expert, but this would seem to be a rather good idea.
This one heads up, never let the facts... Tis said you shouldn't believe everything you read. And this would certainly appear to be true of a new biography of the Duchess of Cambridge by Fleet Street hack Katie Nicol. In the book, she claims Kate threw herself into charity work before her marriage to Prince William and made secret visits to Naomi House, the children's hospice in Sutton Scotney. She wrote, "The centre's proximity to the Middleton family home meant she could visit without attracting attention, bringing gifts or spending hours reading to the children." But a quick call to Naomi House HQ revealed this to be untrue. Staff said Kate made only one low-key visit in 27 in a trip organised by the Starlight Children's Foundation. However, the Duchess made a widely reported solo visit when she was pregnant earlier this year, which was a huge success. Why let the facts get in the way of a good story?
No apostrophe, a catastrophe. This is a type of errant pedantry up to which I will not put, Winston Churchill once wrote in response to some overzealous editing. True or not, Belgarum wonders what the great man would make of a recent parish council meeting in Bishop's Waltham, or should I say Bishop apostrophe S Waltham. For it was the thorny business of apostrophes, or lack of, that councillors tackled this week. Councillor Robert Shields moved to eradicate a 50-year anomaly which has seen the Local Government Boundary Commission record the parish's name as Bishop's Waltham without the apostrophe, when the councillors know perfectly well that the town cannot be itself without the apostrophe. All except three of them, that is, who abstained on a proposal to ask Winchester City Council to change the name of the civil parish so that it includes the crucial punctuation mark. Should it have one? And how much do we really care? Some of them asked. Councillor Jill Stainer set them straight. If you have gone to school here, you would put an apostrophe in, and woe betide you if you forgot, she said.
Wanda knows how to celebrate. Among those doing their bit at Winchester's big sleep out, there will be one resident who is particularly looking forward to it. Wanda Nash, pictured, will be at the cathedral tomorrow, Friday, with many others to sleep overnight, whilst raising money for Winchester's homelessness charities. Wanda will also be celebrating her 79th birthday on that day. I have always wished to spend the night in the cathedral, and what better way to celebrate my birthday than being here with friends, whilst also raising money for such a great cause, she said. And there's a photograph, as it says, of Wanda, eyes closed, having 40 winks.
And now we continue with items of general news. And the first one that I have picked up is to do with the leisure centre that was mentioned in the letters. Council urged to rethink leisure plans, calls for fitting tribute to Olympic legacy. Calls have been made for Winchester civic chiefs to rethink the location of a major new £25 million leisure centre and build it on the edge of the city. A plea has also been made for an architectural competition to design a stadium and create a stunning gateway to Winchester as a fitting tribute to the Olympic legacy. As previously reported, the City Council is proposing to build a replacement leisure centre, almost double the size of the existing one, on a playing field at River Park. The old building will be demolished to make way for a car park twice as big as the current one. But the Council's preferred site has come under fire from critics, including Fit for the Future, an umbrella group of sports clubs who argue Bar End is a better location. The City Council's consultants, Savills, looked at both locations in depth and concluded Bar End had more complicated planning and ownership issues, and it was easier to walk to River Park. Speaking at Cabinet last Wednesday, Emma Back of Winchester Fit for the Future argued Bar End was a more suitable site. She said, "It's a huge area with great potential. It's already home to an excellent athletics facility and multiple sports pitches. There's space for new sports facilities and complementary developments, such as health and educational facilities, or a new hotel. If well designed, this hub at Bar End would create hundreds of new jobs, regenerate the east of the city, and form the basis for a district energy network." Glenn Shepherd, Chief Aquatics Officer for Swimming Club Winchester City Penguins, said the new centre should include a 50-metre pool, bigger than the 25-metre pool currently proposed. Chris Higgins, former Director of Estates at the University of Winchester, asked why the Savills report had not looked at the Garrison ground at Bar End as a possible location, and only King George V playing field. Mr. Higgins challenged council chiefs, saying, "So let's have some vision with a master plan for these sites and commission an architectural competition for a quality stadium at Bar End with green credentials to create a stunning gateway into Winchester as a fitting tribute to the Olympic legacy." Steve Tilbury, Corporate Director of Operations, defended the consultant's report. He said, "Playing fields at Bar End were owned by Tesco, and the City Council only managed the site." Mr. Tilbury said if the City Council offered a ridiculous-sized sum of money, the supermarket chain may consider the offer, but it was promoting other options, including housing development. Council officers said they had considered other sites, including the former Serco depot at Bar End, but they were either too small or unavailable. Mr. Tilbury said, "I think there's substantial support for North Walls, River Park, as a location, and it would not be unambitious." Deputy Leader Councillor Rob Humby added, "We're trying to find the best site and provide as much as we can for what we can afford." Residents near the leisure centre appeared relaxed about potentially losing some of the park. Betty Chadwick, 34, a vet of King Alfred Place, said, "I don't mind, really. I just want somewhere to walk my dog. It would be nice to keep the green, but the facilities need to be improved. I used to be a member, and they are a bit outdated."
Concern over City Historic Landmark. Action must be taken before an historic Winchester landmark is damaged forever. That was the message as Winchester's medieval buttercross was cordoned off for safety reasons last week after a finial became loose. The finial was removed on Tuesday and the barriers later removed. Also known as the City Cross, the structure has stood in the High Street for more than 600 years. It was once a focal point for country folk to sell produce such as milk, eggs, butter from its steps. It's unclear what caused the latest damage, but there's concern for the listed monument's future. Deputy Mayor Eileen Berry, whose photograph is in an inset, said, "We need to preserve it, and there should be a penalty in place for sitting on it. We cannot lose it, it's too important, and the street scene would never be the same again." Julia Sanderson, Secretary of WAG Local District History Group, said, "The City Cross is a very important part of the tapestry which makes Winchester what it is today. American and Japanese tourists do not come here for the shopping, they come here for the history. I've often thought maybe there should be some kind of barrier, but the rails do not have to be round the bottom. They could be round the top part of it to allow people to sit on it." Councillor Chris Pine said, "If you look at the photos from the 1890s, it's always been for people to sit on. From time to time, you get the odd idiot climbing up it, but that would look like... But what would it look like if it was fenced off? A Winchester City Council spokesman said cleaning work on the Buttercross will go ahead as planned in early October. The finial will be repaired and restored to the structure after that. Repair restoration work is planned for the next spring.
Firefighters hurt as blaze destroys family home. Destruction described by commander as one of the worst in my career. A fire has destroyed a family home in a small Hampshire village. Two firefighters were also injured tackling the blaze as temperatures inside melted their helmets. It was described by the firefighter in charge as one of the worst house fires he had seen in his 24-year career. Neighbours raised the alarm as thick black smoke billowed from the roof and flames licked at the windows. Emergency services had feared there might be a family of three inside the two-storey bungalow in Winchester Road, Lower Upham, and firefighters battled horrendous conditions to try to find any survivors. It was later found that the retired couple who lived there were on holiday and their son was at work. They were named locally as Vic and Mary Hillman, aged 66 and 62 respectively, and their son Nathan, 29. Firefighters battled to get the blaze under control following the call at 11:20 a.m. on Monday. And although it was out within 2 hours, crews spent most of the day dampening it down. Winchester Road was shut for most of the day and traffic was diverted. The air ambulance landed in the nearby Lower Upham airfield, but was later stood down. Dave Graham, the fire commander in charge, said on arrival, curtains were closed and there were cars in the driveway. It was horrendous conditions, he said. It was one of the most severe property fires in my career. There was a large amount of flames. You couldn't see across the road because of smoke. There was a risk to the firefighters from the heat, and there always is a risk of collapse when you've got a fire that severe. We kept on putting breathing apparatus wearers in there until we'd searched every bit we could. The police officer in charge, Inspector Paul Owen, said, "The house is gutted. I'd be surprised if it doesn't have to be demolished." Paul Burrows, 28, who lives on a nearby farm, was one of the first on the scene and told how smoke they thought was a bonfire suddenly turned thick and black. He said, "We could see flames coming out of the top of the house and out of the windows. It was already in a very advanced state. The cause of the fire is still under investigation, but police said there was nothing yet to suggest it was suspicious."
Lay off Boomtown, say supporters. Criticism is unfair, says nearby parish council. Supporters of a Winchester music festival have defended it against what they see as unfair criticism. The Boomtown Fair, held at the Matterley Estate last month, is currently the subject of an investigation by Winchester City Council for alleged breaches of noise conditions. But Paul Moffat, vice-chairman of Itchen Valley Parish Council, said the view of those unhappy with the festival was being heard over the majority who support it. "People like to go to events, and if you like them, you must expect a bit of problem here and there, and most people take it on the shoulder. It's bringing a lot of money into the area and to places like Alsford and Winchester. It does seem that there are a few people who are against it, and they are making the most noise about it." In a statement last month, Tichborne Parish Council said the event seems to have been staged with scant regard for the interests of the local communities and the licensing laws. But Mr. Moffat said, "It falls into the Itchen Valley, and we have no problem with it, and it feels that we are not being heard." City Councillor Kim Gottlieb, who chaired a recent meeting between residents and Boomtown organisers, and to which the police were invited but could not attend, said the gathering was constructive. I think the residents appreciated being listened to by the Boomtown people and having an opportunity to make comments. The Boomtown people were all there, and it seemed Tichborne Parish suffered the most of the noise, he said. A spokesman for the City Council said there would be no further announcement regarding alleged noise breaches before November, and that meetings with the organisers were slated for October. In the wake of the four-day party, Boomtown revealed details of work it has done for the community, including the £7,000 raised through donations for the Winnell Rock School, while children from the Sutton Scotney Children's Hospice, Naomi House and Jack's Place were invited to the Kidstown area of the festival the day before it officially opened. Chris Turner of the Winchester Business Improvement District, BID, said the event was bringing numerous benefits to the city. Not only does the festival increase footfall in the city centre, but it certainly has an economic impact on the leisure and hospitality sectors in the local area, he said.
Bid to build student housing complex. Developers are proposing a major expansion of student housing in Winchester. Geoffrey Osborne Limited hopes to build a 250-bedroom block on the Wickham Industrial Estate on Moorside Road, Winnell. The developers say the scheme will help ease the controversial studentification of estates such as Stanmore and Winnell, which has seen scores of family homes converted into flats. Amanda Sutton, director of planning consultants Neame Sutton, said Osborne found a real need to build student accommodation. We knew about the council's initiative to free up affordable housing, and this is the answer. I think if we were in a residential area, then we may get some backlash, but we're out of the way up on the edge of the city. Miss Sutton said, as the development is next to Erasmus Park Student Village, their target market would be School of Art students. There's currently no buyer for the development, but Miss Sutton said it would be ideal for the universities of Winchester and also Southampton, which runs Winchester School of Art. Paul Conway of Winchester-based Architecture PLB said the size of the building was needed to justify the planned 24-hour management service. It includes kitchens serving 79 people, as well as en-suite studios. Must be 79. Mr. Conway said there is a model used by Winchester University based on flat clusters, which we've developed. The links to Erasmus Park was a big factor, but being open to the countryside was also an important factor to the scheme. We've kept a dialogue open between ourselves and Winchester City Council. However, some of those attending the public exhibition of the plans were hesitant about the location and the design. City Councillor Chris Pine said they've a lot of work to do to make sure it's not visually impacting. They've designed it around student groups, but it's not ideal for young people living singly. You've got 250 extra people in that area, so they've got to get involved with someone like Park and Ride, because that part of the town is not well served. It may take the pressure off the demand for single accommodation in the city. It also is proposing a scheme, SRIL Moorside Road.
Mum's shock as four-year-old son leaves school to walk home. A Winchester mother has described her shock after her four-year-old son escaped on his first day at school and walked home alone. The boy gave his teachers at South Wanston Primary School the slip after lunch because he wanted to go home and see his mum. But after wandering out of the gates of the village school, he crossed busy Downs Road and a side street before heading about half a mile home. After finding nobody was at home, he took his bike out of the garage and went to see a neighbour. An alarmed female motorist who had seen the young boy leave the school alone followed him home in her car and alerted the neighbour to his escape. The neighbour then phoned his stunned mother, who asked not to be named, who was shopping in Romsey, and told her that she had her son with her. The mother said, "I was very shocked. I thought she was joking. It's one of those things you don't ever expect to happen. I think he just got a bit fed up and decided that he'd been at school long enough and he was coming home. He's a very intelligent boy. The mum said the boy told her that he'd unbolted a classroom door and gone through an unlocked side gate. She added, "All I can think is, what on earth was the school going to tell me at 3:15 p.m. if he'd been killed or abducted?" When she arrived at the school, the boy was back in his reception class. She was due to meet school staff again to discuss improved security arrangements. The incident happened at about 1 p.m. after his parents had dropped him off for his first day at school at 9 a.m. Jane Bundy, head teacher at South Wanston Primary School, said, "The safety and well-being of the children while they are at school is a priority, and this incident is deeply distressing. We very quickly became aware of the matter, which happened when parents were collecting reception children from a morning session, and fortunately the pupil was located within a few minutes. I've met with the mother, and she's told me that she's satisfied with how the school dealt with the incident. Furthermore, we have reviewed and further strengthened the security of the school site. This is the first time an incident like this has occurred at our school, and I'm confident that with the additional precautions we have implemented, this will not happen again."
Firm at centre of E. coli scare. A Hampshire firm was at the centre of an E. coli outbreak last week. Vitacress, which has a site in Alsford, is the only supplier of watercress to Sainsbury's in the UK, and the supermarket took all of its own brand watercress off the shelves after 15 people fell ill with food poisoning. The Food Standards Agency said that number has since risen to 19. A total of 6 lines of bagged salads containing watercress were withdrawn. Sainsbury's advised people not to consume the product and to return bags to the store they were bought from. Hugh Griffiths, a director at Vitacress, said, "This withdrawal was a precautionary measure. We are undertaking extensive tests and to date we have found no indication of contamination. It's not clear yet what the source of infection is." Mr. Griffiths said the watercress definitely came from England and that most of his firm's sites were in Hampshire, but did not accept that it was necessarily watercress that caused the problem. "It's a statistical link. It would be pure supposition to say at this stage where it is from," he added. A Sainsbury's spokesman confirmed the product came from a Hampshire supplier. "Although no contamination has been found in our products, we have, as a precautionary measure, withdrawn 6 lines containing watercress. We are testing all similar products and have found no indication of contamination." A spokesman for Alsford Salads, which produces watercress in the same area as Vitacress, but does not supply Sainsbury's, confirmed its products were not implicated in the outbreak. E. coli is a bacterium found in the gut of farm animals, and most forms are harmless, but some can cause severe illness, even proving fatal in rare cases.
A Japanese food outlet to open restaurant. Wagamama, one of the country's successful chains. One of the UK's most successful food chains is coming to Winchester. Wagamama's Japanese restaurants have been sweeping the nation, and now Jury Street will be their new home in the district. Versant Developments have applied for planning permission for a change of use of Century House, a Winchester family church site, and want to turn the site into a restaurant across the lower and ground floors, along with 4 apartments. It's understood the restaurant would be 5,000 square feet, seating around 100 people. Versant are still finalising details with the Wagamama, but subject to planning permission expected mid-October, they could be serving up hot noodles in the city by the start of the next year. Managing Director of Versant, Frank Martin, said, "They've been looking for years and they've now found the right site and have found it now, though it took them a while. Subject to the planning application, which is in and expected to go through around mid-October, Works would commence soon after that, and we think they'd be ready to open early in the new year. Modelled on the ramen bars found in Japan, Wagamama was established in London in 1992, building a reputation for fast, fresh food in a quirky environment where starters and mains arrive in no particular order and diners share long canteen-style benches. Southampton, Basingstoke and Portsmouth already have their own Wagamamas, and the news will be seen in Boost for another Boost in Jury Street. This month saw the opening of high-end coffee and wine bar, Black, White, Red, part-owned by England rugby captain Chris Robshaw, on a site that had been empty for 3 years.
Britain's beleaguered butterflies bounce back after hot summer. The hot summer of 2013 has enabled UK butterflies to bounce back following a string of poor years, the world's largest butterfly count has revealed. Long spells of hot, sunny weather in July and August provided a much-needed boost for our beleaguered butterflies, with four times as many recorded during this year's big butterfly count than in 2012. A record-breaking 46,000 people took part, counting more than 830,000 butterflies and day-flying moths across the country. Washout 2012 was the worst year on record for butterflies and had followed a series of poor summers which had compounded the long-term declines of many UK species. But perfect conditions this summer saw butterflies boom, with large numbers recorded across the UK's gardens, parks, school playgrounds and countryside. Butterfly spotters counted almost twice as many individuals compared with 2012. The whites did well, with both large white and small white numbers up by more than 300%. Small white topped the Big Butterfly Count 2013 chart, with the large white in second place and peacock a surprise in third. Garden favourite, the small tortoiseshell, recorded its best big butterfly count result yet, coming sixth. Several species that fared particularly well last year dropped back. Ringlet and marbled white numbers fell by over 50%, and counts of meadow brown and six-spot burnet moth were also down on 2012. The warm weather has seen an increase of migrants from the continent, with clouded yellow, painted lady and silver wine moth in impressive numbers. The long-tailed blue, a rare migrant, has been reported along the south coast from Devon to Suffolk during August. Butterfly Conservation Surveys manager Richard Fox said, "It has been a truly memorable summer, a wonderful spectacle for thousands who've helped with the big butterfly count and a lifeline to the UK's hard-pressed butterfly populations. It reminds us that butterflies are resilient and will thrive given good weather and suitable habitats. The problem is not the notoriously variable weather, but the way that humans manage the landscape."
Detailed plans for Barton Farb revealed. Yesterday, as the Chronicle went to press, architects' impressions and detailed displays for 430 new homes went up for public inspection at the Guildhall. It was an opportunity to see the proposed mix of house types, layout and landscaping of the first phase. Speaking before the event, Carla's director, Mike Emmett, said he had been listening to public concern and insisted he had responded in the wake of public consultation. The point of many of the conversations so far, though, and with the previous objections to the applications, seems to be to justify the 2,000 houses and mitigate the impact, though we need an excuse to build 2,000 houses. I fundamentally disagree with that approach. Winchester needs houses. I cannot promise to address every single complaint, but the comments made on the Andover Road have struck a chord with us and forced us to do a lot of soul-searching, he said. Developers were due to ask council bosses to approve changes to three planning conditions that were outlined by local government minister Eric Pickles last year. Planning officers have recommended that councillors approve Carla's request to submit its design code, a series of standards used to guide development, at the same time as it submit its reserved matters. Developers have also requested greater flexibility in the size of the medical facility they are obliged to build. They told officers the requirement for facilities has yet to be decided by local doctors' practices. A request for a larger pub has also been made, from 200 square metres to 500 square metres. Mr. Emmett said that that was in response to half a dozen serious expressions of interest from national chains, most of whom preferred a site large enough for live-in accommodation. And underneath this article, there are two artists' impressions of what Barton Farm will look like. And, of course, they've got lots of trees and open areas, and you're not at all sure whether they'll turn out like that.
Campaign focuses on booze-fuelled crime. A crackdown on alcohol-fuelled crime has been launched across Hampshire in a bid to remind people of the dangers of drinking too much. Police in Southampton, Eastleigh, Romsey, Winchester and across the New Forest will take part in the week-long campaign, part of a national alcohol awareness drive which coincides with students returning to universities. Across the county, officers will be enforcing a zero-tolerance approach to anyone drunk in streets close to bars, clubs and restaurants, while off-licences and licensed premises will be targeted in test purchase operations to ensure youths are not being sold drink. There will also be visits to nighttime venues to ensure capacity, safety, noise levels and weights and measures rules are being enforced. Underage drinking in parks and other public spaces will also be tackled, with police visiting parents of those caught who could also find themselves hit with an acceptable behaviour contract. The hope is by doing so it will bring home the message of the harm alcohol can do when people do not drink responsibly. Alcohol is known to be a major factor in crimes committed in the other parts of the county as well. Police Licensing Inspector Justin Roberts said, "This week of action will allow us to drive home the message of the dangers of alcohol if people don't behave responsibly while drinking. For some people it can end in life-changing or even life-ending accident. For others it can mean a criminal record that can have a devastating effect on their lives. Then, of course, there are medical effects of drinking too much. We would urge people to think about how much they are drinking and to drink responsibly. We don't want to be dealing with people because they've drunk too much and been in fight and hurt and had an accident or done something criminal. Not only does it affect their lives, but those around them. It means that we cannot be attending to other investigations or emergencies that need our attention." Inspector Roberts also warned those selling alcohol, saying, "You have a responsibility to make sure you're only serving those of the right age and who aren't drunk. Please make sure you do that and look after your customers. We'll be checking and we'll take action against those who don't comply." It's pleasing to know that many, many businesses in our area do take this responsibility seriously.
A healing hand to Kinyo's slum dwellers. Osteopath's second trip to run health clinics. She is swapping her Stockbridge clinic for a vital outreach mission to a sprawling African slum and isolated rural villages. Osteopath Emma Whiteman will fly to Kenya for a two-week trip providing medical help to slum dwellers and nomadic tribespeople. Emma of the Stockbridge Osteopathic Practice is travelling to the East African country for the second time as part of a 14-strong team of practitioners from the Divinity Foundation. She will spend 4 days running health clinics at the notorious Kibera slum in the capital Nairobi, before travelling south to the Amboseli region to set up temporary outdoor clinics for visiting tribespeople. With a population of 1.5 million, Kibera is one of the world's largest and most crowded slums, and disease and malnutrition are rife. More than 500 people share a toilet. Open sewers regularly flood in the rainy season, swamping people's homes, and AIDS is rife because many women turn to prostitution to make ends meet. Few can afford fees for health care. Emma will draw on her full range of medical experience to treat injuries and illnesses, from bad backs and joint pains to gaping wounds, lung and chest infections. The team will see up to 400 people a day and help everyone from newborn babies to pregnant women and the elderly. The 37-year-old mum of three from King Somborne said, "It's going to be a big challenge. We will be working with people who don't normally have access to health care, so we will have to be an osteopath, a doctor, nurse, and midwife at times. It's very emotional seeing the degree of suffering, but the people are so welcoming, kind and thoughtful. It really puts it into perspective how lucky we are in this country. I hope to do this for many years to come."
We Must Get Rail Station Revamp Right, by Andrew Napier. Civic campaigners have backed the preliminary stages of a major regeneration of the Winchester Station area, but sounded warnings. The 2020 group, comprising members of the City of Winchester Trust and WINAC, spoke in support of the City Council initiative, reported in the Chronicle earlier this month. The council wants to look into ways to transform the dowdy neighbourhood that stretches from Upper High Street to the cattle market. Ideas have included creating a high-quality, low-carbon gateway to the city, with perhaps major office development. It has appointed Tibbalds Planning Consultants to draw up a vision that can guide development that would be the biggest in the city since the £130 million Silver Hill scheme. Michael Carden from the Trust told the Town Forum last Wednesday, "The 2020 group have every reason to support this initiative. It would, however, be desperately sad if the eventual outcome should be compromised by any lack of forethought. The military axiom, time spent on reconnaissance is never wasted, is as applicable to planning as it is to warfare, both activities being campaigns which can have disastrous consequences if not well prepared, which is why we attach so much importance to the need for a framework for change. Regeneration of this area will take many years and involve different landowners, different developers and different designers. The different developers will need advance guidance, what Tibbalds calls a strong design vision, so that we do not end up with, in the words of the council's brief, a piecemeal and uncoordinated development resulting in a poor environment and missed opportunities." David Ash, also speaking for 2020, said it was important that developers had not a fixed master plan, but a framework to act as a guide. "The certainty provided by a framework will interest more developers and so generate better land values," added Mr. Ash.
Crops first harvest set to bear fruit. The first harvest of a crop that could transform the face of Hampshire countryside is set to take place next month. Farmers Robert and Gussie Rames are preparing to harvest grapes from the 10 acres of vines they planted in 2011 off Harnham Hill in Cheriton Lane, near Cheriton. Mr. Rames of Grange Farm Titchbourne said, "Things look fantastic. This is our first harvest and we're hoping in future years that will increase. We come from a completely different background of arable and beef. It's hard work as we're learning something new." The Rames were at a recent Alsford show with a stand promoting their wine, Rames Sparkling. Should their venture on the current 10 acres across two fields be a success, Mr. Rames said they were considering setting aside up to 80 acres. That would be a big operation and a huge change for us. The grapes will go to the Hattingley Valley Winery at Weald near Alsford to be made into sparkling white wine for sale in 2015. Several grapes farms near Winchester have converted land to vines, including the Baring Estate at Itchenabbas, which planted 53,000 vines in 2011. The chalky soil is ideal for growing white wine grapes, being similar to the land in the Champagne region of France.
Skydive. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance volunteer Kirsty Watts is jumping out of a plane to raise funds for the charity. She will take part in a tandem 10,000 feet skydive on September 28th in a bid to raise £1,000 for the air ambulance. To sponsor Kirsty, go to www.uk.virginmoneygiving.com/Kirsty Watts Skydive. I'll give you that again, www.uk.virginmoneygiving.com/Kirsty Watts Skydive.
Last to 2013 opening for Waterworks. Twyford Waterworks will open its gates for the last time this year on Sunday, October the 6th, giving visitors the opportunity to discover more about their drinking water. Water from the Hampshire Downs has been supplying its residents for the past 113 years, and the historic pumping station is the only complete Edwardian waterworks to survive intact, with its steam, diesel and electric pumps, its water softening works and industrial railway. Light refreshments and a barbecue will be available at this autumn event, which has ample free parking and a free vintage bus service operating between Winchester Railway Station, the Broadway and the Waterworks. Tickets cost £5 for adults, £4 for concessions, and under 16s go free. Call 01962 714 716 for more information. I'll give you that telephone number again. 01962 714 716.
1.5 million flocked to £84 million shopping centre. A Winchester District shopping centre marked its 100th day in business, having seen 1.5 million visitors so far. The £84 million Whiteley Shopping Centre opened in May, and bosses say they're pleased with the numbers of visitors they're attracting. Operations manager Darren Gooding said so far the shopping centre was on target for where it wanted to be. When it opened, close to 50 shops, cafes and restaurants were providing around 1,000 jobs. Occupancy rate of the shops is currently 95%, slightly higher than it was at the opening with the arrival of Phase 8 store. It's hoped that the centre off Whiteley Way near M27 will be fully occupied by Christmas, with several names interested in the remaining space, Mr. Gooding said. He added, "We are very happy with the number of people visiting us. People are spending, and with the right retail mix, we have, I think, there's a good chance variety of customers to come and enjoy. The restaurants are doing very well indeed, so again, that's very encouraging to see the leisure option being taken up by customers. Further plans are in hand for a striking oval glass building to house a new restaurant, and the Cineworld 9-screen cinema are both set to open in the early part of next year." Mr. Gooding put the centre's appeal down to its convenience. "We're in good location in the nice area, and it's a nice brand new shopping centre," he added.
Group looks at revamping eyesore areas of city. Winchester Civic Chiefs hope to kickstart work on drawing up ideas to revamp tawdry areas of the city centre. Concern has been growing over the state of St Maurice's Covert opposite the entrance to Marks and Spencer. The increase in the number of large bins since the market relocated to the High Street, pigeon mess and empty shops. work on improving the public realm has been delayed by a backlog of work within the historic environment team, said a report to the town forum. Officers are drawing up a brief for consultants to come up with ideas to improve the covered area and make it more inviting. Ideas include moving the bins and cycle racks, which clutter the route to the cathedral, improving lighting, and removing the security mirror. The forum agreed to set up an informal group of councillors to look at the issue.
And that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our copying, dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thank you to our readers. Brian Woodruff.
Goodbye.
And Albie Minns.
Goodbye.
And from me, Vara Williams. Goodbye and do have a good week. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put your label inside, please make sure that cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside the wallet as well. Goodbye.